How do you reach Spain?
I reached Spain
because I am very surprised the first time when I saw your exhibition. How a person from the States reached Spain to make an exhibition?
In 2009, I was at Harvard University, and I was giving a lecture. And when I walked into the room, I had the experience to meet Catalina Castillon, and I was the only visual artist in the room, and she told me about a residency in Corme, Spain, near La Coruña, and from there I applied. In 2010, I received an invitation to work for 1 month at a residency in a museum, Costa da Morte. Just,
you know, I know very well.
In Galicia, and I worked for 1 month to give one piece to their collection, and I had an exhibition in 2018, and I invited Catalina to that exhibition, although it was far away. She was in Texas and I was in Michigan, many, many kilometers, and when we emailed, she thought it looked great, so she sent me Charo's email address, and so I proposed an exhibition here. So that's how it happened. Went basically Harvard to Corme to Madrid.
Okay. So I read your CV this afternoon another time to remember some main questions or some main ideas, and finally I don't understand, how do you arrive to this to question about the light? How do you take this way in all your artist career? Because I know you are a photographer, indeed, and you manage the light. There is light and shadow. There is no more ways to work. But this way of the contamination about lights, when do you take?
It was many years ago when I was working on a sustainability committee, and I questioned where my discipline and my career as an artist intersected with sustainability. And of course, a photographer would look at chemistry at a dark room and obviously come to the conclusion that chemicals that aren't recycled, that go into water facilities and treatment centers are where you would intersect. However, I matured and kind of grew up from that simple conclusion to look at light as the crossroads for sustainability and photography. And that's where I came across light pollution, light trespass, sky glow, because I was trained when I was young to see light only as an ally, as an asset, as good. Now, when I was a young boy, light was also culturally representing good and darkness represented evil. It's that simple. Actually, light is not necessarily the hero and darkness is not the enemy. We need both. And as it turns out, light is a very essential ingredient naturally. We need it artificially at times. I'm not against light. I think light is valuable for surgery and other things. And I'm grateful for artificial light. But there comes a time when artificial light is no longer good for us and it crosses over a boundary and a border into becoming bad for us. So this intersection that I began to read about and study was where light no longer was a friend. It was what we'd say in English, a frenemy, friend and enemy. I discovered that a certain kind of discontent and betrayal, as if this was a bit of, a Greek tragedy. So that's why I photograph at night. That's why I'm photographing places where artificial light is grotesquely overlighting the culture that it's supposed to protect and serve, whether it's for security, which is kind of a false analysis, because artificial light at night is an actual benefit to criminals. Artificial light has a consequence for people with diabetes. It spikes the rates of breast cancer in women by 73% who live in cities where there's a copious amount of artificial light. It upsets our circadian rhythm, and it also is very hard, especially blue light, on our eyes. So if we don't pay attention soon to this invisible problem, we are going to find that short-term benefits are only going to be long-term consequence. So I want to make photographs that reflect the dangers that communities are addressing and people in those communities about the exposure that they have to artificial light, and celebrate darkness as an ingredient to community health, public health, and well-being.
Okay, I think it's enough. We are done.
Great, thank you.